Welcome to Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. I apologize this morning for having our technical difficulties. We're getting started about 15 or looks like 17 minutes late this morning and still have not resolved these technical glitches we have with the recording equipment and the sound production, unfortunately. I believe that you're able to hear my voice, and we're appreciative that that's working. At least the microphone is hot this morning, and so we'll be able to have some kind of a show, even though it'll be without breaks and without a break for the host, which is probably the most important reason we take breaks. Well, at any rate, what we'd like to do today is encourage you to give us your phone calls to the station here to discuss our various ideas and things we're going to be going over. You can reach us at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955 here at Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We also welcome your questions and comments by email, and you may send them to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net, and we'd encourage you to avail yourself of that opportunity. We have a number of announcements and things that have come through my email account here that people have been sending to the questions and have been forwarded to me. Elizabeth would like to remind us of something that Mark Cochran, who substituted for me on Monday, announced on Monday, but she wanted to make sure that it didn't go unnoticed again. It's an advertisement that says, "Is your mind being controlled? Come to a special presentation on mind control techniques used in government, politics, business, education, and the church. Hear how the liberal, socialistic, and humanistic agendas are misleading conservatives and Christians into accepting a one-world government. This PowerPoint presentation will be by Dean Gotcher, Ph.D. from Kansas, a former professor at a Christian college. Dr. Gotcher lectures nationwide on how the liberals use the dialectical method to control and manipulate conservatives and how we can counter this. The Constitution Party is sponsoring this meeting, which will be held at Denny's Restaurant, 2521 Wade Hampton Boulevard in Greenville. Meeting will be Monday night, February 21st, with a Dutch treat dinner at 6:30 p.m. All are welcome to this meeting. For information, call Al Hafer at 242-4474. See their website at www.constitutionparty.com. Again, Al Hafer's phone number is 864-242-4474. That's 864-242-4474. Sounds like an interesting meeting. Hope you can make it there. Quite an interesting opportunity, it seems to me. We have a few more emails that we want to get to from different folks. We have some comments from people like Doug, who looked at the web page and just wrote in quickly, "Great page, Dr. Coben," and he says he's going to link to our Policy of Liberty webpage. We appreciate that, Doug, and we thank you for writing into the show to let us know that encouraging remark. We also have some other questions that came in, one from Rob. Rob wrote in and said, "Hi, Dr. Coben. I've met you a couple times over the last 2 years at some functions put on by Robert Clarkson's Carolina Patriots group. I remember you mentioning something about you were able to get a passport without giving a Social Security number. I'm wondering what you said or how you went about that. Also, I want to get one for my daughter, but we don't have any numbers for her. Are there new laws going to force us to get a number to get a passport? One last thing, do you use PGP at all? Thank you for your time, Rob Mills." Well, I'm not 100% clear on what you're referring to here. I do know that there are certain members in America who do not have to have any kind of Social Security number, you may well be among that group. For instance, the Amish people or folks that are affiliated with a Mennonite church do not participate in the Social Security system. Because of that, the government has provided means for people to get passports who do not have Social Security numbers, and it's actually quite easy. It's simply in the directions for how to get a passport. On the reverse side, as I was reviewing that at one point, I noticed that you simply fill in zeros all the way through, zeros all the way across, and where it says Social Security number, and when you submit it to the National Passport Office, or if it's your first time when you're going to your local post office or county clerk, you simply indicate that you have no Social Security number, and it indicated that you were to fill in zeros, and that's what you've done, if you're asked. If you're not asked, I wouldn't even bring up the matter. This is, I think, a good idea, because a Social Security number is used, Rob, so many places today to simply identify people and link them between different databases and sort them out as sheeple are tend to be in the modern world here in America. And if you can, therefore, get your passport without using the Social Security number, I think it's better, because I just don't like the idea of being linked together with all these governmental agencies. That's up to you whether or not you choose to do that. But as far as I understand it, that is the method that's prescribed on the form, that if you don't have a Social Security number, you simply put in zeros on the form, and that takes care of that. We also have a couple other interesting emails, and not only emails, but people sending in interesting articles. Here's one more on the light side of things. It says, parents say teacher made son use Lysol in Elyra, Ohio. We always have, in this last couple of weeks, a lot of government school sorts of emails and articles. Elyra, Ohio, a school district was sued by parents who say their son's fourth grade teacher made the boy spray himself with Lysol in front of classmates because of body odor. The lawsuit was filed. I wonder how many mothers feel like doing that sometimes with their sons. Anyway, the lawsuit was filed Wednesday in Lorain County Common Pleas Court against the Sheffield Lake District of suburban Cleveland. It asks for $50,000 in damages for public humiliation and subsequent harassment by classmates. The boy still suffers emotional distress over the incident, according to his attorney, Michael Duff. Bill Emery, school board president, said he was unfamiliar with the March 2003 incident at Forest Lawn School and said he knew of no disciplinary problems involving the teacher. The teacher, David Stacco, who is retired, has an unlisted phone number and could not be reached for comment on Thursday. But I'll tell you who he should contact is the makers of Lysol. He could probably do a commercial and make some good part-time income as he becomes the celebrity for Lysol use. We also have want to jump in here and talk a little bit about economics while we're before we're sorting out some of these other emails and articles. You know, I think I mentioned several times on the air that part of my homeschooling duties are to take the high schoolers and encourage them to understand a little bit about economics. So, in part of our homeschool routine, the older children end up taking an economics course with me, at the end of which they take the nationally recognized CLEP exam, the college level examination program, for both micro and macroeconomics. And the first child actually did make it through, got high grades on those tests, and was awarded a year of college credit because of it. So it's part of our family routine to do these CLEP exams, and currently I am working with a couple of the other children who've now reached an age where they're good to go on learning economics. And in the morning times, we spend a couple times a week usually discussing these economic themes. Well, one of the books I've been using, which I'd encourage you to get if you want a mainstream textbook, college level textbook for economic understanding, is called The Economic Way of Thinking by Mr. Paul Hain. I use the 9th edition. There may be a more recent edition. At the end of every chapter, it has some very insightful questions about economic theory. And for instance, this morning with the students in the homeschool, we were discussing chapter 19 or chapter 7, question number 19, and it simply says this: does a policy of protecting people against losses due to their own mistakes make those mistakes more frequent and the losses consequently greater? Insurance companies refer to the danger that insurance will make the insured against event more likely as the problem of moral hazard. It's one of those economics jargons that we're trying out, and we're going to see if we can't help you understand a few of these words as we go along. And this says, first of all, given that fact, will insured houses have more fires than uninsured houses, other things being equal, and why? Will insured houses have more fires than non-insured houses, other things being equal, why? Well, the answer is yes, they will, when it says other things equal. No one has an incentive to burn himself down or to die, and therefore that incentive will not change. But what does change when we have insurance is that people tend to be more careless. Insurance companies realized this years ago, that this moral hazard, called moral hazard problem, occurs. People become careless when they realize someone else is going to pay the bill, the risk has been transferred. And so they began to install inside your policy a deductible. If you ever wondered why there are deductibles or time limits or waiting periods, the reason is they don't want people to lose the incentive to take care for their own lives and their own property. And so a deductible tells people, look, if you want to use the insurance, you're going to end up having to pay something for it, and therefore, don't be so so willy-nilly or willing to run out and have an accident or have some problem. Take some care for your property and your life so that you don't have major issues. But in general, insurance changes things in terms of people's incentives, and this is an important feature of economics. Now, you homeschool kids, make sure you pay careful attention to this, and let me give you another example that might even drive it home better, as it did for me in the past. Why do we wear seatbelts? Well, we wear seatbelts supposedly because they force us to help us save lives. That's the public interest reason given for the proactive policy. Now, there's some debate about whether seatbelts actually save lives. That is another area that we can question. But assuming that that is the case, do they really cause people to drive more safely and to save lives? Or does the opposite occur? Well, economics logic would suggest that the opposite occurs. When you have seatbelts and people feel like they have a safer situation, they're not willing to take as much precaution and as much care. And therefore, we have more accidents because we have seatbelts. Just the opposite effect that was intended by the wayward public policy. Well, here's another interesting feature. Gordon Tullock, one of my favorite economists of last century, and still currently teaching at George Mason University, I understand, was actually a lawyer and learned economics on the side, and even though he has a law degree, I don't think he's ever taken a formal economics course, was self-taught in economics, became quite brilliant, and especially in starting the whole theory of what's known as public choice economics. Well, Mr. Tullock says, if you really want to change someone's incentive to drive more safely, you have to do the opposite of the seatbelt. You have to install a knife. You may say, what are you talking about? How can you install a knife? What does that mean? Well, what it means is simply this. If you've got someone who's driving along the road and he knows that inside his steering wheel has been installed a lance, a saber, or a knife of 12 inches long, razor sharp, that will immediately pop out of the steering wheel and face his chest at the very slightest impact in the front or the back side of the car, knowing that by any impact that thing will plunge into his chest and immediately kill him, it dramatically changes the incentive of the driver, doesn't it? And so the economics lesson is, if you really want to reduce the number of traffic fatalities or cause people to drive more safely, then you simply need to install knives. We don't need to install seatbelts, because seatbelts will have precisely the opposite effect. But a knife will make everybody drive very, very slowly. And if you truly want to change incentives, we need to go that route instead. Well, that's a simple economics lesson. I hope that that's of value to you as you thinking today economically a little bit. We want Christians especially, and those who love liberty, to think better, to think about economic theory, to be able to ponder these thoughts and these situations, these scenarios, and so be able to apply them to public policies as they evaluate the veracity and the effectiveness of public policy and whether or not they should support it. Well, I've been told by our production staff, who's now waving at us, that we might actually have something going with our recordings and bumpers and so forth. We're going to give them a shot and see if they can actually take us to a break here and move the show along. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. We'll be back on the Tyranny Response Network in just a few minutes.
You're listening to TRN.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement.
Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain. Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Yes, it's so good to be back on the air with all of our production equipment and software and so forth working. Glad you're with us today. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Your phone calls are welcome to 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. In fact, we have a caller on the line right now, and we'd like to get to that call right away. Who do I have on the show with us this morning?
Nelson, John.
Hello, Nelson. Thanks for calling the show.
Right on. Hey, great show so far. It seems I tuned it in just when you got it rolling in earnest. Makes me feel a little less of a night owl.
I bet it does.
Interesting comments on insurance. What do you think is the Christian constitutionalist self-reliant answer? What would we have in place of insurance, ideally? Simply self-reliance and careful driving, etc.
Well, that's
more careful driving.
Well, that's a very good question. Actually, insurance in its free market form, rather than the government muddled, regulated insurance industry that we have today, but in its free market form, in its purest form, insurance is actually a wonderful thing, and it shows an advanced economy. The more advanced an economy gets, the more prosperous people get, the more valuable their time gets, the more important it is to have means to transfer risks to third parties who are more sophisticated and better at handling those risks and dealing with problems. And so insurance in and of itself, in its purest form, is not a problem whatsoever. And self-reliance, one might be making the wisest choice by transferring certain risks to other people. Now, that's a different issue entirely than the public policies that have to do with insurance or regulating the industry or causing no-fault claims or forcing people to buy automobile insurance, for instance. These kinds of things are a manipulation, a perversion, and a problem-causing element of government policy. But in and of itself, insurance is actually a good thing when it can be acquired voluntarily, so that certain individuals who have very high opportunity costs, for instance, who value their time or certain events, or who simply are so ignorant in certain areas that they need to be able to transfer risks, are able to do so. As long as a product, any product, can be offered voluntarily on the free market with no coercion to buy it, it's actually a very good thing to have available, and it shows that we have a very advanced economy.
I would agree. There's no question that a major problem with insurance, as we now know it, if not 9/10 of the problem and the curse of insurance, as we know it, is the fact that certainly for cars it's compulsory. And, well, quite frankly, I've heard from people who should know what they're talking about. A lot of insurance companies are just plain corrupt. I don't think that they follow the golden rule or the Ten Commandments in terms of honoring their commitments to pay out and whatnot. Have you heard? What is your opinion there, if any?
Yeah, well, I think that's probably true. And the reason is the more government gets involved with the picture, the less the insurance company has to rely on its own reputation and the less it's subject to competitive market forces to behave correctly. People behave correctly in a market system by a common grace from God, not because they believe the Bible, the Ten Commandments, or some other moral code, but because they know if they misbehave, that they will lose business and they will end up not being able to stay on the market whatsoever. They will go out of business. For instance, if I'm a builder and I have a hammer and I do and a nail and a screwdriver and a drill and so forth, and I use those things to build houses or remodel homes, but I do a poor job and I create a dangerous situation as a result of my work, it's not going to take too long before people say, I don't want anything to do with this guy anymore. There's 99 other people down the street here that have hammers and nails and these kinds of things. I'll go ahead and go to them. But as soon as you get into a racket situation where the government requires insurance to be purchased, that opens the door for lobbying pressures. It opens the door for political responses by insurance companies, and they will even open up entire lobbying arms, legal and lobbying public policy sorts of arms of the company to allow them to acquire benefits outside of the market structure. And this leads to corruption. It leads to claims not being paid. It leads to perversions of the way clients or policyholders are treated. It leads to contractual nullification in some respects. It leads to people manipulatively using adjusters to avoid paying what they ought to pay, and the plethora of problems we have. But I would suggest that insurance in its purest form is not the culprit here. The culprit is the involvement of the state in a proactive public policy in a role it should not have anything to do with.
Everything you say makes sense, and I think I, as usual, agree with you 100%. What is your answer, or what should our answer be as Christian libertarians, small l in my case, to what do we do about people who are going inevitably to drive without insurance and get into crashes, and of course they're the ones that are killed or maimed or deprived of their property along with everybody else, but the bums are not going to have to compensate us, and their insurance, no insurance company of theirs is going to either. Ideally, I mean, our kind are talking about a total return to God's law and God's way of living, in which there would be very, very little, if any, irresponsibility of that type. But on the other hand, there would be people who, for instance, could not afford it, even temporarily, and would get into an accident by accident. What's the answer there? In other words, you or I are hit by such a person and permanently paralyzed or something like that, and would our insurance be what covers it, or what would be the answer there?
Well,
in a free market.
Yeah, well, you
could. Just we envision.
Well, even now, there could be a policy that would be issued by an insurance company that would cover the claims of the uninsured motorist against you, or not claims against you, the claims you would have against the uninsured motorist. So that it's possible to cover those things. The problem is in a system where we have an interventionist state or a welfare state, people are going to suffer losses, not only direct losses through the theft and extortion that occurs through taxation policies as the government steals from us, but also in stealing away or robbing us of our rights to restitution, proper forms of restitution, either through the courts or otherwise. We see this with no-fault insurance, and we see this with people going into medical emergency rooms because they can't be turned away. Someone has to pay the bill, even though they don't have any insurance.
these things occur because government has caused market distortions on the market, and there is no way to avoid them. And so what's going to happen is, if indeed that does occur, you will suffer, as you mentioned, you will suffer a loss, Nelson, and your loss will be no different than any other loss you suffer at the hand of the state, whether it be a tax or otherwise. You will simply be the victim of government bungling and of socialism and interventionism, and a victim of, frankly, tyranny, which is what we're opposed to here on the show. So how can you avoid it in the modern day? I don't think you can. I don't think you can avoid it any more than you can avoid their other ridiculous extortive schemes. In a free market, this would not be a problem because you would have contractual language that would permit restitution. No prison sentences here. We're talking about them being forced to pay you for the loss they cause. You would also cause them to perhaps even go to the point of being involuntary or put in slavery for you for some period of time. I mean, there are all sorts of ramifications that could be used or modifications that could be used contractually in a legal system, that the rules could be set up so that it favors the victim every time, and the victim, as much as possible, is compensated or restored, and that would be the goal. Well, if you have other questions, you're welcome to hang on through the break. We need to run to a quick break. Our producers are raising their hands, but hang on if you'd like. Otherwise, thanks for the call.
Okay.
We'll be right back on Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Welcome back to the program. This is Christian Worldview. We hope we're providing lots of roughage for your brain this morning and helping you think better as a Christian. You know, if Christians were just taught to think instead of being gullible and voting for every piker that runs down the block and holds up his flag and says, "I want to be president and I'll do all sorts of great things for you," we would have not half the problems we do in America today. And we're thankful for Nelson being on the line calling us this morning, talking about these very deep subjects. Well, really not that deep. Freshman-level economics that if people just could grasp some simple concepts, would help them avoid so many pitfalls of modern public policy and not misunderstand or misconstrue public policies as they are stated to us by politicians who frequently know nothing about economics either. Before I get right back to Nelson's call, I want to just make a quick mention to about an email that Greg sent in, and he sent me a note, said, specious, which means plausible but wrong. And he thought yesterday when I was quoting the professor from Princeton with the word speciesist, that I was mispronouncing speciesist as specious. Greg, it wasn't actually the case. This guy actually believed that a human being could be speciesist. It's hard to pronounce that as it is. Not specious, although the argument is specious. speciesist because he could put human beings over other species. And he said, remember, there's no difference between an adult human being and an adult mouse. Both have the same right to life. The nutcase up there in Princeton. Of course, he's consistent with the Darwinian worldview, isn't he? He's upholding correctly his understanding of the world as from his godless, secular, humanist perspective. We have to give him credit for when credit's due, and he's being consistent. He's just very wrong, and we oppose this kind of thinking here on Christian Worldview. So appreciate the comment, Greg, although I do make errors sometimes in my pronunciation, especially of German names. I was not making a mistake when I read speciesist yesterday instead of specious. Well, we're still talking with Nelson online about economics, and we want to get back to any other questions that Nelson might have. Thanks again for calling the show, Nelson. Did you have something else you wanted to add?
I do, if we've got time. Tons of things. First of all, I want to commend you for paying attention to word studies and word meanings and stuff, along with everything else on your plate with this program. That is extremely important, and of course words have been called weapons or tools, and we do need to get abreast of that. Certainly the liberals are very aware of their use and their place in the scheme of things socio-politically. At first I thought you were saying specious yesterday too, but then I realized it was the liberal neologism speciesism, and of course they're giving us a new ism every day, which is in fact a weapon pointed at our head in some way. If you think about it, there's ageism in addition to sexism and racism, there's lookism, which is discrimination on the basis of people being prettier than some others, and that's where they kind of that's the way cockroaches operate. They just spoil things a little more at a time every day or every night in the dark, and we've got to put a stop to that, don't you think?
Oh, that's a great comment. Actually, I was thinking while you were talking, you know, there's some notice that came out that they found a new strain of the HIV virus, the AIDS virus, and it's the latest microorganism really spreads quickly and kills people rather rapidly. But in reality, we need to look at some of these little words and isms that are invented by the liberal left as no different than another parasitic or parasite or a microorganism, just as infectious and maybe even more dangerous in a social sense or in a philosophical and even a religious sense than the bacteria and other microorganisms that invade our bodies.
Mm-hmm. As I was getting the net up today, here's another topic, if I may, briefly. One that aggravates me no end, and I think that people have got to get hip to in earnest instead of just in a fluff vein, which is, as the case has been for many years. One of the headlines of the moment is that Scotland Yard is, quote, investigators used their latest high-tech equipment to gather new information at the site of the 1997 crash that killed Princess Diana. And what really aggravates me more than almost anything else is the way the sheeple ran after Princess Di and made her a cult figure in her lifetime, even though she is basically a glorified royal slut, if I may be frank.
Mm-hmm.
And after she died, I suppose thousands of bouquets that were sent and showed up in pictures in the coverage worldwide, and the outpouring of tacky, superficial, basically meaningless grief really made me want to vomit. And my feeling there was always that these people really loved her that much and cared for her children after she died and wanted to console them, blah, blah. Why on earth didn't they demand an investigation as to into what was clearly, from everything our kind of people heard and circulated, a conspiracy hit? What do you think?
I followed all that stuff, and I was an interested reader, but I certainly had no special inside information as to what actually happened. It did seem like there's a lot of stuff going on with that whole royal household, you know, with him being accused of being a homosexual and then recently deciding to marry this person he was having an affair with, and some other stuff was going on. Perhaps this other woman, Diana, was just used as a a production means to produce the upcoming princes or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's rather despicable, but it could well be that there is a great hypocrisy, as you're saying, that people just don't ask for the investigation for what seems like a pretty clear and spiritual.
It just shows the difference between public passion for a thing or a person and the reality that love or devotion would normally involve. I think that she has actually become the new martyr to liberal, the rich and famous version of liberal nonsense that takes the place of Marilyn Monroe. Of course, she was the hero of Gloria Steinem and all these other feminists, and they babbled idiocies about how great she was and how she died for our sins and all this stuff for years and years. And I think Diana is a new, later version of the Marilyn cult figure, cult anti-hero. Well, I'm going to shut up. I'm being too controversial. Appreciate the program, and looking forward to the rest of it. Thanks for everything you're doing.
Thanks for your call, Nelson. We do appreciate that. And I tend to not, as a tyranny response unit, I tend to speak to what I know. And conspiracy theory is not something I know a lot about, other than I'm an interested hearer and listener ever since I listened to Murray Rothbard talk about the Rockefellers and the Morgans and the Illuminati and a few other things. But I tend to be more outspoken on things that I know about, namely economics and public policy. But appreciate that insight, Nelson. I'm sure our listeners also were intrigued to think about those things. We also want to direct our comments and focus those things on this show towards how to make Christians think better, or specifically, what is the Christian worldview with respect to liberty, with respect to peace, with respect to free markets, with respect to government regulation and policies. Those are the key issues we want to focus on here. And not only that, theological issues. We want to talk about deeper issues of the Bible and theology as it relates to self-defense and so forth. So we're going to try to keep our comments focused that way on the show, and I think that is a good objective, and it really is the name of the show, Christian Worldview, and we want to keep it within that range. We've run over for a break, so I want to quickly jump to a break here on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network, and we'll be right back.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
And trying to avoid being stupid is part of having deep thinking, isn't it? And we sometimes read from this little book, Unusually Stupid Americans, by Catherine and Ross Petras. Page 27 says, enlightened education funding in the Big Apple. It says, it's the prime example of spending education money where it really matters, on chauffeured cars, of course. More specifically, New York City schools chancellor Joel Klein rides in a chauffeured limo while poor school kids under his administration go without lunch aids. It sounds almost like a scene from a Dickens novel. Because of a budget crisis, New York City recently announced that it was laying off 3,200 lunch and teacher's aides to save money. Meanwhile, it is continuing to give its board of education head honchos chauffeured cars along with bodyguard drivers. Why can't they take cabs or the subway like everyone else? And do they really need bodyguards, one might ask? It's unlikely you'll ever get an answer. The cars even come equipped with sirens. The New York Daily News reported recently spotted a driver for $250,000 a year Deputy Chancellor Diana Lamb shooing another car away with lights and sirens, despite a City Hall directive that says sirens should only be used in emergencies. The Daily News also spotted another Board of Education honcho, Deputy Chancellor Anthony Shores, who takes home $168,700 per year, taking his son to school in a chauffeured city car. Chancellor Klein himself has two drivers assigned to him. In total, the Daily News estimates these vital perks cost at least $580,000 a year, enough to pay the salaries of 28 school aides, but priorities are priorities. I wonder if homeschool moms would like to have a chauffeur and a bodyguard. I don't know if they need one, a bodyguard, but it might be nice to be able to provide that for our homeschool moms, since they actually do produce something of value in society, namely highly educated kids. And yes, I am putting you down if you're in the public school, once again, or the government school. I don't think you're doing a service to society. I don't think you're being salt and light. I think it's folly and you're collecting a paycheck, and that's why you're at the public school if you happen to be a teacher there. Anyway, you can call and contend with me if you'd like to the station. We'd love to talk about the government school here, and we have many detractors because of that religious icon. We've been reading also, and we don't want to neglect, the Bill of Rights. Today we're on the Seventh Amendment to the Bill of Rights, and we've been Bill of Rights, by the way, for those of you who were educated in a public school like me and didn't realize there were a Bill of Rights, they are the first 10 amendments to the Constitution ratified around 1789 or so. The Seventh Amendment to the Constitution says this: in suits at common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, that was real money dollars when gold was gold and money was gold, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Oh, so you have that preservation of that right guaranteed. But how easily is it overlooked by courts today? What a sham. What a shame that amendment has pretty much become null and void, the Seventh Amendment. We also have a quip from P.J. O'Rourke. We've been enjoying reading some P.J. O'Rourke on the show about every day. A little government and a little luck are necessary in life, he says, but only a fool trusts either of them. And you're so right, P.J. We appreciate your witty insight, as usual. Elizabeth had sent in an email. We want to get to that email as well. We appreciate folks sending in their emails to the show with respect to different items of question, namely what the topics that are brought up on the show or what they see on the webpage. And here she writes in about nonprofits, mainly about the ads that run during the Christian Worldview and on the Tyranny Response Network. She says, John, I really appreciate the show, as I have expressed in the past. She's written in the past, as I recall. But I have become a little confused listening to the NP Pros advertisements on TRN. Is TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, a nonprofit organization? If it is, why? It seems to me that becoming a government-recognized anything would only bring government regulations control into the organization. I know of several people who also listen to TRN who are wondering the same thing, and it does seem to me to be a relevant question, seeing as the general theme of TRN is to learn how to live free of government regulation. I hope that you can clear things up for me, Elizabeth. You know, I was thinking the same thing, Elizabeth, when I was listening to Gene Papke doing that little ad spot. It sounded like he was saying all of TRN was a 501c3 tax-exempt government organization, and that is simply not true. Now, I'm not on the board or the management staff or anything else of the Tyranny Response Network. I simply do the show here, Christian Worldview. Other people handle all of the TRN part and the rest of the recordings during the day and the management of the station, so to speak. But I will tell you this much, that I know that, and just to clear this up for you, we are completely unaffiliated in any way with the government as a recognized entity, a tax-benefited entity at the Tyranny Response Network. However, there is a group called TRU, Tyranny Response Unit Enterprises, I believe it's called, and they are a 501c3 with the sole purpose, set up as the sole purpose of receiving money from these corporations who are looking for a tax write-off and need to donate in kind or bad debt to a tax or a tax exempt charity, and then after that group that entity TRU receives the money, it then funnels it out anywhere it likes, and specifically its specific beneficiary has been the Tyranny Response Network. So it's like it's kind of like having these dual entities. That's just there as a means for people who have corporations, businesses, and are actually filing tax returns and want to get a tax write-off to go ahead and send a contribution, receive a deduction. It has nothing to do with the Tyranny Response Network, however, and it has nothing to do with Christian Worldview and the programming that goes on. We are not a tax-exempt, nonprofit, tax-privileged, or whatever organization. I really appreciate you asking that, and I'll be passing that note along to the production staff, so maybe they can clarify that, possibly even re-record the spot that maybe may have led to the confusion, because I was thinking the same thing when I heard it the other day. We've come up against a break here at the bottom of the hour on the Tyranny Response Network. This is Christian Worldview, and you're listening to Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to the show. You can reach us by telephone at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Live between 7:30 and 9 other times, and even during the show, you can email us questions and comments to questions@policyofliberty.net, and we encourage you to do so. And Elizabeth, who just asked one question, also sent in another question this morning on the welfare state system. She says, John, a thought on the welfare state system. It seems that the Christian church should have little difficulty seeing that the welfare state is in fact its enemy. Should is the operative word there, Elizabeth. Anyway, the welfare system seems to have actually taken over the role of religion in so much as faith, hope, and brotherly love are concerned. Recipients of welfare programs no longer need to look to God for help with their problems. This requires faith, patience, and prayer without ceasing, which might seem like a lot of work to some.
They merely need to fill out a few forms, and they have checks coming to them into the mail, almost like manna from heaven. Churches today do not want to attack the welfare state because then they would be held responsible for taking care of those in their congregations who need assistance, and churches today seem to think that food baskets at Christmas are their only duty to those in need. Besides, if they tried to assist all of those in need, they wouldn't have the money to build multi-million-dollar structures with ridiculous padded seats. Just a thought. I really enjoy a place where I can cast my views to like-minded individuals. Thanks for keeping the show going day after day with such great content. Well, thank you very much for saying so, Elizabeth. We endeavor with great diligence to do so. We are assiduous in our actions and trying to fulfill the mandate given to us at the Tyranny Response Network to provide high-quality, upper-end thinking talk radio. We want to be a talk radio show that helps Christians think better, more biblically, with greater understanding of economics and other disciplines like public policy, for instance, than their counterparts that they're going to, or the run-of-the-mill guy they're going to see out in the street. We want Christians to be more informed and therefore be able to avoid the pitfalls that beleaguered modern society. Well, what we can say about what you have to say here, Elizabeth, is just agreement. The welfare state is a bogus fraud that was invented by Marxians or Fabian socialists a little over a century ago, and had been brought into modern public policy primarily through the efforts of men like Franklin Delano Roosevelt and President Lyndon Johnson. These two presidents were perhaps two of the most wicked presidents this country has ever had, despite the fact they might have done a good thing or two here and there. Shouldn't surprise us when we find bad presidents do one or good things here and there that you could point out, well, he did this, that, or the other that I like, when in fact the majority of what they do, or the vast majority of what they do, is patently evil. The idea that government should be in charge of welfare is foolish, both from a moral sense and a biblical sense, and also from an economic sense. Governments do not have the incentives nor the resources, resource allocation capabilities to properly provide for the welfare of citizens. The only thing that can provide for people's welfare is charity. And in a proper free market sense. And charity is primarily derived from two sources, the family or the extended family and the church. The government should not ever enter the picture as the provider of welfare for people. It's unbiblical to do that, and it's uneconomical to do that. The war on poverty, so-called war on poverty, started by Lyndon Johnson, has been an abysmal failure. People are still in people are still in poverty in the United States, people are relatively poor, in spite of all of the efforts government has done to put up Section 8 housing, or provide food stamps, or provide so-called disability benefits, and so forth. People now have disability claims for stupid stuff like fibromyalgia, which doesn't even mean anything, I don't think, as far as I understand, talking to physicians. People collect for all sorts of reasons and are a constant drain on those who have to work. The government is not able to correctly decipher who and when should receive welfare. And the early Marxists, of course, were offended by private charity because it would require, for instance, in the Salvation Army's case, a person to go and sit through a sermon, and that could be offensive to a person, that he'd have to be subjected to listening to gospel preaching or some such thing in order to get his daily needs met. Well, folks, this is the way it works in the market. If the market produces such a product and people who are interested in producing charities also want to give you food for the soul, then that is indeed the way and means in which there will be provision in society for those who are impoverished. And it's too bad the government doesn't like it, or the Marxists don't like it, or the academic philosophers of this great moral relativistic age don't like it. That is the way that it is. So that's what should have occurred still, but instead government has supplanted it by its interventionist state, and we have all sorts of wickedness, higher taxes, more corruption on account of government intrusions into the economy through welfareism. We're coming up against a quick break here, trying to catch up to our break schedule. We got a little bit thrown off earlier on the Tyranny Response Network. We'll take a break now and come back in just a minute.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we're here hurling liberalism aside with great force this morning. Love these little spots this production staff comes up with. Very cute. Well, we have so many little stories to get through today. People have been emailing. I'm not, by the way, going to be able to get to all of them, but a few of them should be noted. We have the Manhattan Institute sending us information continually about public education here at the Tyranny Response Network. And just to note the statistic lately is that 71% of people still are that's the graduation rate from high school. That has not changed in the last 10 years. Well, it went down from 72% since 1991. We also have people more prepared, however, to go to college, they claim. 25% were prepared in 1991. Now 34% are prepared. It says also the state with the highest graduation rate in the nation is New Jersey, 89%, followed by Iowa, Wisconsin, North Dakota, each with 85%. And the state with the lowest graduation rate in the nation was South Carolina, right here in our own backyard. 53% of people who attend South Carolina public high schools graduate, only half. Followed by Georgia, 56%, Tennessee, 57%, and Alabama, 58%. Interesting factoid for those of us who are information junkies that like data points here and there. In addition to the public school rates like that, percentages, I guess we could say, we have an embattled PBS chief will step down in 2006 story from the Associated Press a couple of days ago. Pat Mitchell, the public broadcasting service chief, under fire for spending public money on a cartoon show that also featured a real-life lesbian couple, will step down when her contract expires in June 2006. Mitchell, the nonprofit network's fifth president and chief executive officer, also faced significant fundraising challenges. She drew recent criticism from both liberals and conservatives for postcards from Buster, in which the title character, an animated bunny named Buster, traveled to Vermont, a state known for recognizing same-sex civil unions. Though the focus was on a farm life and a maple sugaring, the episode entitled Sugar Time featured an actual lesbian couple. Well, it's nice to see that that's being ousted. However, it's just a symptom, frankly, folks. The root is still there. The multicultural, secular, humanist, alternative lifestyle ideology has infiltrated public schools. It's infiltrated public broadcasting, the media, in every way, and it's in our face all the time, is it not? So interesting comment, interesting story to reflect on. We also have a story from Nelson, who writes in and says that 11 Christians were arrested, jailed, and charged under hate crimes legislation. This was last year. He wants to remind us that, remember, that 11 Christians in the Philadelphia-based Repent America were arrested, jailed, and charged under the hate crimes legislation during evangelistic outreach last year called against the Outfest, so-called Outfest homosexual pride event held in public streets of Philadelphia. I guess they held up these pink signs that said things on about repentance and so forth, and they simply arrested these people, hauled them off for preaching the gospel. The homosexuals, of course, they can say all that they want to. The sodomites can go up and spew anything they would like to, but the Christians are not allowed to do so. If they do so, they go to jail. They were asked to move, apparently, and they refused, saying that they were in a public area and they wanted to be able to speak. What is America coming to, folks? The homosexuals are in Philadelphia, dominating the Christians. Even the airwaves have cartoons for children talking about homosexuality. What a shame. The sodomite revolution is truly upon us. Well, we have a couple of other interesting stories that came in. The ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, that is hiding out after this Philly hate crimes blunder. For nearly a century, Reverend Ted Pike writes, the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith has earned a formidable reputation for defaming those who oppose it. Broadcasters especially have operated in dread of the ADL, fearing they should they utter a word of criticism of the ADL or of Israel, the ADL thought police would smear them as anti-Semites, ruining their careers. Yet things are changing. The ADL, through their National Executive Board member, Philadelphia District's Attorney Lynn Abraham, jumped the gun in launching a vicious, incredibly punitive persecution of these 11 Christians in Philadelphia on October 10th. Confident they could create a media blackout so impervious that even Philadelphians would know nothing of the outrage. The ADL planned to rapidly convict the Christians under the harassment of penalties, our harshest of penalties, 47 years in prison and $90,000 in fines. With this legal precedent in hand, they could then initiate many more indictments utilizing ADL-inspired state laws in 46 states. But their plan backfired. Though through the cooperation of more than 50 American talk show hosts, the media blackout was broken through, the whole world was informed and outraged at what the ADL tried in Philadelphia. As a result, the ADL is lying very low, trying to stay out of public scrutiny. It is perilously close to losing its dream of a hate-free America, an America in which Christians who criticize homosexuality or Zionist policies in the Mideast will be criminalized. Well, that is good news, isn't it, that the ADL, throughout all this October event, has lost some credibility and lost some steam, perhaps. Interesting. Appreciate you sending in that story. Brad also would like to let us know that there is a draft going around for how to write to your congressman, a senator, to asking them to impeach George W. Bush, the latest tyrant, King George, the latest King George in America. He says, dear Representative, please register my strong support for the campaigns to impeach Governor or impeach George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, John Ashcroft, and Donald Rumsfeld. Well, Ashcroft isn't around anymore. Maybe this is old, Brad. Well, I just got it today. At any rate, I'll continue. I believe these men have overstepped their authorities and have exceeded the powers granted their offices by the U.S. Constitution. Further, they have broken international treaties such as the Geneva Convention, and this increases the danger to our own troops in the field. These men may have committed war crimes by ordering the carpet bombing of areas of Afghanistan. The Bush Doctrine of preemptive war is illegal under the Nuremberg Charter and is the same thinking that the Nazis employed 60 years ago. Their assaults on civil liberties in the United States are unconstitutional, and they directly violate the guaranteed rights of American citizens. The Bush administration's decision to ignore freedom of information requests is clearly illegal under that act. And finally, the Bush administration's obstruction of investigations into the events of September 11, 2001, and investigations into the Osama bin Laden family prior to the September 11th may warrant obstruction of justice charges. Sincerely, insert your name here, your constituent. Well, interesting letter, and I do, of course, think that we ought to impeach George W. Bush, as every other modern president in the last 30 years specifically, or 20 years at least. So I would encourage people to, would we really have impeached Reagan? Let's see. We have to give Reagan some credit. He was a far better president, even if he wasn't Thomas Jefferson. He was a totally different league, at least, on many scores, foreign policy for one. Than these other recent guys like Clinton and one of the two Georges. At any rate, Brad, appreciate the encouragement to write to the congressman asking for the impeachment. If you would like that letter, write to me through questions@policyofliberty.net, and I'll forward the text to you so you can go ahead and send it off to your congressman. We're coming up against our final break here in the show on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast. But we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's nppros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.nppros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Disinfecting the Modern Mainstream Media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
And we're back here now reading about the national ID card again. A listener sent in an important article, or actually a news release, regarding Ron Paul and this particular bill. That's a very libertarian, runs on the Republican ticket, former presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party, Ron Paul. Thursday, February 17, 2005, says, this bill's feature in the Senate, future in the Senate is uncertain at this time, although Representative Paul's office has told Gun Owners of America that House leaders are contemplating whether to attach House Resolution 418 as an amendment to the tsunami relief bill. Here's a quotation from Ron Paul. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a national ID bill last week that masqueraded as immigration reform. In reality, the bill is a Trojan horse. It pretends to offer desperately needed border control in order to con credulous Congress into sacrificing more of our constitutionally protected liberty. That sounds very serious. Representative Ron Paul from Texas got it right. H.R. 418 is not about immigration control as much as it is about citizen control. Last week, the U.S. House of Representatives voted 261 to 161 to send H.R. 418, the so-called Real ID Act of 2005, over to the Senate. The bill federalizes the issuance of driver's license, an activity which until recently has always been a state function. Because no American will be able to fly, take a train, or buy a gun from a dealer without a driver's license, that meets the federal standards of the bill. H.R. 418 has effectively created a national ID card. Let's watch out for this one, folks. We have to be very careful that our rights are preserved, because what will happen is, as this national ID urge goes through the Senate, we may end up losing in one file swoop all sorts of liberties. As soon as they have a national ID program, the next step will be to include Social Security number, other information on there, as well as attach credit reports to it. Just like they do in other countries, liberties will continually be eroded step by step, not just by this rather innocuous federalizing of the driver's license, but what will follow as soon as we let the camel's nose into the tent. Again, pretty soon, like anything what government does, gradualism will end up being our undoing and the loss of so many liberties. Folks, we've been losing liberties for years and years. Let's wake up and be aware of this. We had far more liberties as Americans 100 years ago than we have today. Far more. Not only in the kind of money we use and the number of taxes we paid, but in the regulations we faced. And the government was far more willing to uphold rights even 100 years ago, and certainly before the war between the states. So beware of that. Appreciate the people sending in the article about that, because it's a very great interest to us. We also have some other interest about faith-based initiatives. Brad sends us an article this morning saying that former aide blasts Bush's faith-based plan by Deborah Reichman from the Associated Press. The Bush administration is defending the president's faith-based agenda against criticism from a former White House staffer who alleges the president gained politically from his vow to let religious-affiliated organizations use federal money to help the needy, but lacks a commitment to the initiative. Folks, I'm not going to bother reading all the rest of this article. Let's just get this straight. George W. Bush may claim to be a Christian, but his actions completely speak to the contrary. The man is not acting like a Christian. We know this because of the way he treats people in Iraq, with the hundreds of thousands of people killed there, with the way that he robs people and takes away their rights, robs people of their rights, and he robs people, too, by supporting extortive taxation.
In addition to the fact that he allows abortion to continue. These reasons alone are enough for us to realize that George Bush is not upholding Christian values or principles in his life. I don't care if he goes to church once in a while or even every Sunday. I don't care if he claims that he's a Christian or that he gives lip service to so many things that Christians like. Look at his actions, folks, not what his words are merely. His faith-based initiatives are a bankrupt system that was used to coddle and to appease the conscience of the strictly religious right. The strictly religious right had no business supporting George W. Bush. He was not the president that they expected him to be. And pragmatism is never a reason for Christians to vote. There's no reason we can say John Kerry would be worse, and therefore I got to vote for a lesser of two evils. The only vote that's proper for a Christian to cast is a principled vote. Last election, you had Michael Badnarik and you had Michael Perutka running on the ticket. And although they had so-called no chance of winning, mainly because the Christian right refused to vote for him, they still were the principled vote. And look, folks, if God wants one of these guys to win, he will put them in power. All you're required to do is to vote for what's right on a principled basis, and that requires you to vote for one of those two men this last election. If you voted for George Bush, it was simply sinful and wrong. It's time to move on. Don't make the same mistake again. Otherwise, you have more of the same, this nonsense that goes on with George W. Appreciate the comment. Well, we had a sort of a rocky show today because of our production, in terms of the actual working the mechanics of the show, because of the production difficulties we had early on. I wanted to get into some more deep theological questions from the Christian worldview perspective. Have not been able to do that in the last couple of days. We have been able to talk about some economics, though, and public policy that I think is important for helping Christians think, and we appreciate the opportunity to do that and being able to share that with you on this show. We also appreciate those who are continually reforming the Tyranny Response Unit and those who love liberty here at the station, especially on Christian Worldview, of different articles and emails. Great questions today from the audience. Appreciated Nelson's phone call as well as the emails from Elizabeth and others. They always make the show great. Please spread the word about the Tyranny Response Network. Remember, we do have our webcast going. More people have been listening to the webcast in recent days, especially this morning. I noticed that we have a fair number. Still plenty more spots available for people that want to listen. And remember, the webcast can be heard nationwide or around the world in someone's office or in their home. Avail yourself of the webcast. It's a great way to listen to the show. We also have recordings of the show that people listen to, and we appreciate that. And those recordings are available at the homepage, policyofliberty.net. But encourage your friends to tune in one way or another, either on the FM dial in Greenville or by the webcast through the policyofliberty.net webpage link. We're coming to the close of the show now, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We really appreciate you bearing with us this morning, and we hope you've had a good time thinking more deeply, and we look forward to seeing you on Monday morning. Until then, God bless you.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.